One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to Deconstructive Criticism. I am Aaron Flam, and today we're going to talk to Dr. David Eberhardt. David is chief physician of psychiatry at one of the biggest hospitals in Sweden, and he is also something as unusual in Sweden as a public intellectual. Those are my words, not his. Besides being a doctor and a father of too many children for me to count, he's also an author, and he has written on what English speakers call helicopter parenting, and he debuted by diagnosing Sweden with addiction to safety, calling it back in those days a national panic syndrome, what Gad Saad would in some instances term mass Münchhausen hysteria, by noting the mass hysteria that would break out in the Swedish collective about rather mundane everyday risks. David is, in other words, an expert on ills of culture. He's also one of the people who alerted me to the Google Trends statistic of the Me Too campaign's impact on Sweden. But today we're going to talk about the Royal Society's book of the year, Cordelia Fine's Testosterone Rex, a book that argues that Bateman's principle was biased and that culture shapes us to a much higher degree than genetics or hormones. David and I charged each other late last summer to read the book and record a conversation about it. After all, it is quite extraordinary that the Royal Society awards a science book prize to a book that is against science. And we recorded this episode before Me Too, which made me put it a bit on hold. And then there were the demonstrations and attacks against Jews in Malmö, Gothenburg and Stockholm, and so it was delayed even further. But now, finally, it is time. I want to apologize beforehand if you find mine or David's English to be subpar. In that case, please blame me. I thought it important to record this conversation in English, even though we both have Swedish as our native tongue, for the simple reason that Cordelia Fine's book was written in English. We read it in English, and the subject concerns more than just us Swedes. And since David is a medical doctor with some experience in the field of biology, and a psychiatrist with some insight into the mind, I thought it important that his voice be heard. Personally, I'm not a scientist, and where I and David disagree here is on language. He finds Cordelia Fine's book rhetorically brilliant. I do not. Maybe it's because as a comedian I'm fairly used to using words as sleight of hand, and that's my biggest problem with her book. But before we go on, I'd like to thank you for being a Patreon, swishing me at 0768943737, 0768943737, or donating bitcoins to the address written below in the description to this episode. Thank you. Your contribution is appreciated and put to good use. Maybe not in this case, since some of your money went to Cordelia Fine's attempt at denying the heliocentric worldview, as if though she's Pope in a female version of the Catholic Church. But what I'm trying to say is that I had to use some of your money to actually pay for her book. But if that is what it takes for people to realize they are being flim-flam, then so be it. In conclusion, I thank you, and I am sure that Cordelia Fine is even more grateful. And so, let's listen to me and David discuss it as best we can. Enjoy. So, welcome back to Deconstructive Criticism, David Eberhardt.
Thank you.
Is that how I pronounce it in English?
I don't know. I suppose so.
Because we've podcasted before.
Eberhard, maybe.
Eberhard.
Maybe Eberhard.
Both sounds equally cool or and strange. But we've podcasted before.
Yeah, several times.
Yes. Normally we do it in Swedish.
Yes.
But now it seems our podcast will be having maybe international implications. So we decided to do it in English instead.
Yeah, we'll try anyway. Yes. See, it depends on my English, though.
Because I gave you an assignment, or we gave each other an assignment, to read Cordelia Fine's Testosterone Rex.
Yes.
Named Book of the Year by the Royal Society of England, founded in 1660 by some of the most, you know, prestigious scientists in
Isaac
the world.
Isaac Newton
was
a member of the Royal Society. Charles Darwin was a member. Several great scientists.
Yes, and now the revolutionary Cordelia Fine.
Yeah,
yes.
It is amazing.
The book is called Testosterone Rex, Unmaking the Myths of Our Gendered Minds by Cordelia Fine. And so I think the judge's motivation for naming it Book of the Year is, and I quote, "Every man and woman should read this book on gender bias. Testosterone Rex is an important yet wickedly witty book about the 21st century, which touches on the current debates around identity and turns everything on its head. Pressingly contemporary, it's the ideal companion read to sit alongside The Handmaid's Tale and The Power." I haven't heard of The Power, but The Handmaid's Tale, I watched the show, and it has certain political leanings, one might say.
Yeah, you could do that.
Yes, yeah. But you've read the book now.
I read the book, yes, and I must say...
And your background is actually from a STEM field. I mean, you're a psychiatrist.
I'm a psychiatrist, for the international listeners. They don't know, I'm a psychiatrist, and I work as the head of staff, as a senior consultant at an open ward clinic in Stockholm. And I used to be the head of staff of the Stockholm County Psychiatric Emergency Ward. So, and I've been working with psychiatry for, I don't know, 20 years.
All right. Like so we can see this as sort of the admittance hearing of Cordelia Fine to your clinic.
Yeah.
Because The Guardian, they wrote a raving review of this book.
Yeah.
They said this is... this proves with evidence that inequality of the sexes in society is purely cultural and not natural.
Yeah, they obviously believe in what Cordelia Fine writes. And I don't really blame them, because they have no prior knowledge of biology. And if you don't have that and you read this book, It's really well written. It's witty, like they wrote. It's fun, and she is rhetorically brilliant, I would say. So it should have a prize, but definitely not a prize from the Royal Society. It should have a prize in journalism or
propaganda.
Propaganda. A propaganda prize. I would totally say this is the book to choose if you have a propaganda prize, because the problem with the book is that she chooses a lot of I don't know if we should say
I think personally my personal where I would like to start is to say that she starts almost every chapter with a personal anecdote of how she sexually oppresses her children, trying to form them into sociopaths.
Yeah.
And then exclaiming some sort of joy every time she closes in on success.
Yeah, you could say that. But for me, when I read the book, it's very obvious that she takes the most sort of... It's a straw...
She builds up a straw man.
She builds up a straw man in every chapter. She says the the defenders of what she calls testosterone Rex is the sort of testosterone is the only deciding factor, and nobody believes that testosterone is the only deciding factor. That's a straw man argument,
yes, but,
to say.
But people, I mean, especially biologists, they do believe that testosterone is one of the key factors.
Testosterone is a really, really important factor, but it's not the only factor. And no, there's no biologist or no scientist that says that testosterone is the reason why there are differences between men and women. So when she starts with this all the time, and oh, so we saw this was wrong because men may be different in different cultures, and if you look at the evidence from that, you have a lot of researchers brilliantly put in the blank slate by Steven Pinker, or in Nurture Assumption by Judith Harris have written about sex differences and why we turn out the way we turn out. You can say it's really obvious that around 50% of what makes us, our traits, is defined in about 50%, that's genetics. And about 50%, it's environmental factors, but around 40% of those environmental factors are due to unknown factors.
Culture could be one of them.
And culture is one of them, I would say. But we don't know the impact of it. But it has an impact. And that what she says in this book, with how many pages is it? It's around 200
pages.
200 plus pages. And what she says is that, yeah, we know that culture has an impact, so testosterone Rex is wrong. That's the only thing she says over and over and over again. But that is obvious.
Yes.
Everybody knows this from the beginning.
Yes, but that's not all she does.
She does a lot more than that. But
she constantly says something that we all can agree with, that sex or biology is not the only thing deciding your personality, for instance. I don't believe that. You don't believe that.
Nobody
believes that. And then she jumps to the conclusion that because biology is not the only deciding factor,
there's no biology involved.
Yes, there's no biology involved. And already in in the introduction, page 21, she accuses the scientist that I haven't really heard of before, Stoet, that he emphasizes that people should be free to make counter-stereotypical career choices. But he said most people will still, you know, be slaves under their biology to the extent that they sometimes choose more stereotypical career choices, right?
Yeah.
So he doesn't disagree with her. But she takes his argument and then she claims that he wants, you know, everyone to be different and all the toys in the stores for boys and girls to be absolutely different. And then she comes to her conclusion on page 21, at least in the digital version that I bought. And I quote, "But if the sexes are essentially different, then equality of opportunity will never lead to equality of outcome." So she's not really interested in equality of opportunity. We already have that in society.
Yeah.
She is interested in making society from individual to individual, regardless of sex, sexuality, and other preferences, completely the same.
Yeah. And that's what she said. That's what this book is all about. And what she does is by saying that there are no differences from the beginning, there's no biological difference. So we could just as well do like this. We could just as well try to have that as a goal.
Yeah.
But and then she has a lot of research that which writes about a lot of research, and she always says that okay, there are some small differences between men and women, which is obviously the case. The differences on a population, like you and I know, and we've discussed before, we are all individuals. But what you have to remember is when you compare the sexes, you will find a lot of men that are more female than a lot of women, and a lot of women that are more male than. Men that are more female than women, and you have a lot of women that are more male than men. So that you will always find. So you have groups, but the groups don't totally overlap, but they do overlap. And this is nothing new. This is what every researcher knows. But you still can find on a group level differences, and you find those differences. The only thing that she agrees on is that there are differences when it comes to genitals.
Yeah,
which is obvious. She can't obviously say something else. But and then she says, well, when it comes to the brain and how it's the sex hormones change the brains. Well, that's a totally different story, because you have some people that are more female. Among men,
yes,
which is
fine.
It's not a valid argument against the testosterone testosterone rex,
as she calls it. But that's another mistake she constantly seems to make. Is she jumps? She doesn't seem to be able to understand that even if culture is affecting the individual, culture also comes from individuals.
Yeah.
So our biology determines culture determines biology.
Yeah, and that's one of the what you see in all cultures, you have the same. And actually, she says in some parts here that you have different cultures. You have some cultures where you are more male chauvinistic than others. And that is also obvious. But still, even in the cultures where, and she finds, you know, she looks around with a looking glass to find one culture where there is sort of different hierarchy.
Where the circumstances of environment are so different that they actually affect like the natural order of human genomics.
Yeah, and there's this blogger called he calls himself Yeo. He wrote a really good blog post about this, which is called I'll see if I find it's called Why Sexual Selection Matters and Why Cordelia Fine is Wrong, and he has a lot of. She talks a lot about the Bateman's principle. I don't know if you're familiar with Bateman's principle.
Yes, the fruit fly guy.
Yeah, the fruit fly guy. And she says...
Maybe I should explain to the listener. Yeah, so there was this guy back in the 40s who had... He was some sort of scientist, or at least he used that as an excuse because he had this huge fetish for how fruit flies mate.
Yeah.
And he wants to see them have sex with each other. So, and he wants to test variance between the sexes, how much males mate versus how much female mate.
Yeah.
And what he came to the conclusion that it is more economically sound for males to try to mate with as many females as possible in order to maximize their chances of begetting offspring, while women have the more economically sound strategy for them is to be choosier.
Yeah.
That is to wait until an appropriate male approaches them, and then she will decide if she wants to bear his offspring or not.
And this is interesting because she writes a lot about Bateman's principle, and really Bateman, he had some experiments that he did not publish, according to Cordelia Fine, which if he had published those, it would have been a totally different story.
Yes, she accuses his work of being biased and unscientific.
Yeah, unscientific, which is really... I would say she has no case doing that in the first place. But the second thing about it is that Bateman's principle, which she doesn't write about in the book, it's replicated in all species, nearly all species.
But she writes in the book that it isn't replicated.
No, she writes that it is not replicated, but this is totally false. Bateman's principle is replicated in hundreds of species. So that's what she bases the whole book
Yeah, she tries to tear down the Bateman principle.
She thinks she tears down the Bateman principle, and she says, "Okay, Bateman's principle is not valid." So that's why I say Testosterone Rex is not valid.
But how can it then be named Book of the Year by the Royal Society in England?
It's totally astonishing. But it also had a lot of there were a lot of people, biologists and scientists in different places that really has elicited criticism about this award.
Yes, but I mean that it could be named the Book of the Year just to begin with is kind of astounding.
You tell me, why is this?
Politics, I suppose, or maybe someone is blackmailing the board of directors or the jurors.
Could it have
jurors?
It has something to do with Me Too, I think.
It could have something to do with that. I'm not going to comment on it quite yet.
No.
But so she says in the book, on I think it's location 300, so page 36, by 2012, a lengthy table in an academic behavioral ecology journal listed 39 species from across the animal kingdom, in which research had established that female promiscuity brings about greater reproductive success. 18, and while in many of these species this link is nonetheless stronger for males, sometimes it's equal, for instance, in the yellow pine chipmunk and the wild eastern something something.
Yeah.
So this is something she does all the time.
All the time. All the book through, she finds one strange species, and says, okay, it does. This applies for all other species, but not for those. So then we say this is not correct.
It is quite an interesting technique because what she says is because biology works this way for the dung beetle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Biology doesn't matter for humans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what she says all the time for 220 pages.
Because one of the examples she takes, I think it's not maybe the dung beetle, but there is some beetle where the males have two options. They can be born without antlers or with antlers.
Yeah.
And huge antlers, and so they the ones with huge antlers, they wrestle other males with huge antlers outside of the big entrance to the big cave that the female digs.
Yeah.
Yeah, into the dirt. Yeah. But then the female is smart and she also digs a side entrance for bugs or males that don't have big antlers.
Yeah.
So they can take the side entrance. So she can breed for strength or intelligence.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah,
so there's only two options for the dung beetle male, and it's basically hardwired into its biology.
Yeah.
And she takes this as an example of why human biology doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, this is so strange. But it's also, she also, all the book through, she tries to tear down the theory of testosterone Rex by saying that okay, it's not only as a male you should not only be strong and sort of that's not the only way to go through with evolutionary. So the culture needs to you need other ways. Or always, you don't. It's not only the biggest and strongest that survives, but this is also obvious. It's like Steven Pinker writes about this in A Blank Slate, that when it comes to humans and obviously other species as well, but you need different ways, evolutionary to survive. One way is you are stronger than the rest. Another one is like you're more intelligent. A third way is you're more
funnier,
faster, sympathetic,
bigger
friendly.
Breasts.
Yeah, a lot of
smaller breasts.
Smaller breasts. There's all ways, different ways, but still we go back to Bateman's principle. You can say it's still the male way of reproducing himself. Is by trying to get as many as possible. And the female way is you can't do that. You need to be pickier.
Yes, and then she says because of the Bateman principle, this is what she believes for real, that men strive for status means that women don't strive for status. She completely misunderstands the Bateman principle.
Yeah.
Women still strive and compete amongst themselves for higher status males.
Yeah.
So there's still competition and status and rank among females.
Yeah.
And she takes this up as if it doesn't exist in the what she would call the testosterone paradigm.
Yeah.
But what I think she does is really she's attacking the foundations of sexual selection, which is not, according to her, that's a sub-theory of natural selection, the Darwinian theory.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's actually the foundational pillar.
Yeah, of course. But it's really, it's also interesting, like, I don't know if you remember the part where she talks about or writes about if you have a female that tells a total stranger, would you like to go to bed with me? Or would
I read
like
it, yes. And I've seen that experiment because, you know, there were funny videos online.
Yeah. And that's really fun because...
So let's just go through the experiment first. So some experiments, they sent out a boy and a girl separately filmed on campus asking people randomly if they want to have sex with them.
The first question was, do you want to go on a date with me? The second question was, do you want to... Come by my place or something. And the third was, do you want to have sex with me? And when it came to, do you want to go on a date, there were not so much gender difference. It was quite a little bit. But when it came to the last question, you want to have sex with me, they were all men. All the men said, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Immediately. Women. Immediately. Women. And the funny part with this is an amazing, a huge difference between men and women. But the thing Cordelia Fine does is she explains this by the women were afraid. That's why. And that's, I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt. It may very well be that some of the women would like to have sex with this guy, but they were afraid. But still, the difference is so huge. It's sort of, there's no overlap.
Even more than that, she doesn't seem to understand that the risk of rape for women is one of the reasons that they have to be more biologically choosy.
Yeah, of course.
So it really works in tandem.
It really does. And she never addresses that.
Because she does this trick where she still separates colors.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Culture and biology.
Yeah.
And they are interacting, and everyone seems to agree with this. Hardcore biologists agree with this.
Everybody knows this except Cordelia Fine.
Yes, and I'm guessing
the
most...
the Royal Society, the jury.
Apparently. That is quite interesting, by the way.
Well, it's really fun because this Yeo, the blogger that I talked about, when he writes this blog post, he talks about the Occam razor.
Yes.
Which is really the way you should address this book, because it's like he writes and like it's obvious. You can always find arguments. You can even find arguments for that the earth really actually is flat, or that we all were created from Adam and Eve. But in order to have this world order to explain that, okay, the world is flat, you have a lot of flaws all the time. You have things that don't really fit, but you have sort of, okay.
It's not the fastest way to the simplest solution.
No. But if you use Occam's razor, the fastest way to the simplest solution is biology, matters. Testosterone matters. Other sexual hormones matters. Other substances, other things, genetics matters. This is the simplest theory. And you can always find another theory, but it has a lot of holes all the way through.
Like, because you have like to make a lot of presumptions.
Creationism, flat earth society, they also have sort of, but they need to say, okay, we explain this by this and this and this. And that's what Cordelia Fine is doing all the book through.
Yeah, she's argumenting
doing it well, by the way.
Yes, you think so. I personally don't think so. I take offense with this book.
I take offense with it because I think it's she does it in a funny way, and I think that's why they like it.
No, I think it suits
and
them.
That's more. I think it suits them, but this is really what makes this book so bad, because if it would have been written by a person that were not so gifted in the way of writing and
lying.
They would never been able to give her a prize.
Yes, but I also think that maybe, or at least this is what I want to suspect, is that maybe the members of the Royal Society of England or London or the Royal Society, they've grown really tired of these social constructionists, and just getting them to get some evolutionary biology into a text is such a huge win for them, they're willing to give her a prize for it.
That's a conspiracy.
Because that's how I felt after a while.
Yeah, but you get so tired when you read it.
It's truly amazing. She seems to use the words "in short,"
yeah,
to just dispel with evidence.
Yeah, that's what she does all the time.
I can quote: "In short, neither promiscuity nor competition are necessarily the preserve of male reproductive success. But even when she finds species where female variants of reproductive success is greater, it means that females actually can, you know, make a profit from fucking around."
Yeah.
Yeah. Even then, the male variance in that species is higher.
Yeah, all the time.
Yes.
Every time. She writes it, yeah, but she ignores it.
She ignores it, and she says it disproves the Bateman principle, and she comes back to this, yeah, and every time it's like she disproves herself.
Another fantastic example of the book is when she writes about that male people are more sensation seeking, they are more aggressive, they do more harmful stuff, which is obviously true. I don't know if you're familiar with the Darwin Award.
I am quite familiar with it. It's one of the few points of light in my life.
Yeah, me too. Darwin Award is for the listener who doesn't know, I don't know how they phrase it, but it's the best way this year to get rid of yourself,
to exclude yourself from the gene pool and thus contributing to human development.
Yes. and it's always men.
Yes.
It's always 100% of the time, because men live more dangerously, they take more risks. And what Cordelia Fine says, this is just because you have a narrow way of defining risk. And then she starts comparing the risk for your life with baking of a souffle.
Really?
I don't know if you remember that part.
No.
It's so hilarious when she says, okay, maybe men die more from living dangerous lives, but women, they may bake a souffle just before the guests arrive on a big dinner party. And that's
really
that's a risk.
Yes.
It's an embarrassment.
Yes.
But what she does with this example is saying, okay, it's different, because men wouldn't mind whatsoever if the souffle
wasn't puffy enough.
So what she really says, her argument is is saying that there's a huge difference between men and women from the beginning.
Yes, and that's what's so fascinating, because when you come down to like her basic points, it seems that she is reinforcing gender stereotypes on every single page she writes.
Yeah.
And she's also calling for, sexual morals to be reinvoked.
But only for men, because she only says for it's men, okay not... with women to be promiscuous, but not men.
Yes, she has. And what's funny is she refers sometimes in her Bateman critique to Swedish biologists Malin A. King and Ingrid Anesjö, and let them sum it up. And they sum it up like this. Parental care, they note, seems less flexible, but even this can sometimes vary within a species. For example, in some troops of wild Japanese macaque monkeys, adult males protect carry and groom 1 and 2 year old infants. So here again, she takes an example from science. So I looked these people up because they're Swedish, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and you sent it to me, so I saw it.
Yes. And I mean, it was quite obvious. Once again, we meet the Swedish State Secretariat for Gender Research.
Yeah. The gender religion, you mean?
Yes, precisely. A Swedish government agency who gets 1.7 billion Swedish crowns a year to promote what they called, in Swedish, it's called gender science. So it isn't even called gender research or gender studies. It's actually called science.
I know.
Yeah, and it's just state funded. And so are these biologists. So their work is, to say the least, suspect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will include the pictures of these two researchers, if you would like to call them that. I certainly wouldn't.
In the
description of the episode beneath the episode on Patreon. So
in
the book, she writes, among other things, she says that, I quote, "I learned a plethora of words for women who had a lot of sexual partners. Slag, slapper, slut, floozy, tramp, tart, loose, easy, prosy, bike, whore, and only one for men, gigolo."
Which always
seemed to carry an air of humorous accomplishment somehow. Which is fine, and there are probably fewer words for man whore than there is for female whore.
Yeah.
But, I mean, gigolo is not the only one. Toy boy, fuck boy, man slut, seducer, Casanova.
She didn't do her research very well there.
Mm-hmm. Don Juan, lady killer. I can go on and on. And let's go to the last one. Rapist. So there's basically just a plethora of lies throughout every chapter of this book.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is only based on lies. Or lies and even more, I would say, lack of relevant research that does not go in line with what she wants to say. So she either doesn't know about it, that there is a lot of research done, or she ignores it.
No, I don't think she ignores it. I think she willfully lies because she's painted herself into a corner where her entire income is based upon this lie. All her followers, all her friends, all her relationships are tied up into this lie.
That explains why she wrote the book, but it doesn't explain why Royal Society gave her a prize.
That is true. I did find the quote, however. Quote, "From this, we can consider a couple of ideas. The first is that perhaps an updating of gendered norms of chivalry could usefully be made." Okay. So she wants to reinvoke, you know, I guess, feudal society? Because that's where chivalry comes from.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Her next quote here, "Solicitude and generosity be redirected to the bedroom instead. The second is that some of the gap between the sexes in enthusiasm for casual sex might close if the event left men sexually frustrated the majority of the time, but women almost invariably enjoyed full sexual release." Here she's arguing that it would be better if society reversed the roles for casual sex so that men never enjoyed casual sex and women and enjoyed full orgasms every time.
Men could never have an orgasm. Okay, good luck. How is she going to do that?
Well, I'll tell you, because actually she has a suggestion further down in the last chapter that you wanted me to read extra diligently.
Yeah.
Yes. So in the last chapter, she suggests, because it turns out that if you take mice away from their mother and put the father in a cage with the little mouse baby, the father will, after a while in the cage, start mothering the child, or at least parenting the child. Yeah. So Cordelia Fine's solution is to put all men in cages, and when women have children, put the babies in prison with their parents or their fathers.
That would do the trick, I think.
Yes, but it is kind of an extreme solution.
Yeah, but
to
what most people don't even
consider a problem.
Exactly. But that is a fine summary of the book, I would say. That there's no problem here. Men and women are different from the beginning. We live together. It's fine. We have some problems. But if we lock up all men and the women will do whatever they do, and we lock them up, like you said, and then the male will probably, if they have a kid in the jail, they will take care of the kid.
Yes, and but this is so strange. This is, it's like they've taken a cue from the Islamists, but then turned it around. You know, it's like, I'm going to have four wives. I'm going to lock them up. They can never walk outside. Yeah. They're going to tend for the children. And I mean, in most human society, sure, women did stay home with the children, but they weren't necessarily locked up with the children. No. They had the fucking privilege to be home with the children.
Yeah.
While the man wasn't enjoying male white privilege, he was toiling the field to support his offspring.
Often really under circumstances that were dangerous and like...
Dangerous, poor, brutish, and short.
Yes.
And now she wants to reverse all that by taking the worst example of how males have treated females and do the same to all males.
Yeah. Are you sure she wants that?
No, well, she writes it in her book.
I know, but I think you have to give it the benefit of the doubt. Maybe she just did it rhetorically to be funny.
Yes, maybe. Or... Maybe she's an ideologically dangerous person who doesn't accept rational argument. And when you have presented...
That we don't need to argue about. That she is.
No, but that's the point. Because that's the Popper paradox of tolerance.
Yeah.
If your opponent doesn't accept rational argument, but still wants to violently reshape society, then you have the right to take up arms against that individual.
Yeah.
So... In essence, Cordelia Fine has written a book giving me permission to hit her in the head with it.
I would like to. Could we go see what happens if you do?
Well, I would probably be arrested.
Probably you would. Probably you would.
Which is sexism. Because if there is no biological difference between men and women, there should be no law against me hitting her.
No, of course not, because that is if
she wants to imprison me and my child.
Yeah, if she wants to imprison you and your child without the mother.
That is not implied. That is explicitly written in her book.
Yeah, no. Then you may have to defend yourself.
Obviously. So in the last chapter that you wanted me to really delve into, she states that the gender development system of psychology and social science achieves what prenatal testosterone cannot do. She says that social constructionism explains everything that testosterone tries to explain.
Yeah, but well, there once again, she's totally wrong. And we don't need to argue about it, because all the research says that she's totally wrong. And she in the last chapter, she goes back to her own arguments in previous chapters all the time to say, like I said in this chapter. But the problem is that she never in any of the previous chapters really slaughters the testosterone paradigm thesis. She never does it. It still holds, but she just says, like, we started this conversation with this straw man version of arguments, where she goes back to say that they're made. If I think she also writes about this, where female that have problems with their adrenal glands,
CAH,
exactly, and that, which is always used as a powerful, not proof, but nearly a proof of the difference between men and women. And she uses it, twists it totally reverse it to say that this, since you know, I don't know if you're familiar with CAH, it's like these women that have a lot of testosterone, they become more like men
when they're in utero, when they're in the mummy's tummy.
Yeah, and they are more like, they behave more like boys, and this is a quite valid, strong argument saying that testosterone really do matter. But she turns it around in some strange way to say that this is, no, it doesn't really. And I never understood how she did that. Because the only thing she really did was saying, because I say so.
Yes.
Like I showed.
I'm trying to find
see if you can find it.
Yes. As you might recall from chapter 4, CAH is a condition in which very high levels of androgens are produced in utero.
Yeah.
And from here, it's just a few short steps to the conclusion that sex inequality is natural and inevitable. But since testosterone Rex is extinct, we need another explanation of what's going on.
Yes, she just... Can we talk about it from her?
Okay, so this is how she does it. She says, as you might recall from chapter 4, CAH is a condition in which very high levels of androgens are produced in utero. And from here, it's just a few short steps to the conclusion that sex inequality is natural and inevitable. But since testosterone Rex is extinct, we need another explanation of what's going
that's
on.
That's so amazing. So what she does is, which this is one of many strong cases that support testosterone Rex.
Yes.
But she doesn't even she just jumps over it.
Yes.
So, okay, since it is extinct,
because she said so.
Yes. Because I said so. Then I don't need to bother with this little dilemma that this is the case.
Yes.
It's so amazing. And she does that all the time.
She comes to the conclusion in the book that apparently we're all for sex equality.
Okay.
I think she's right. I mean, even though she started the book by saying she's for equality of outcome, not gender equality, which is something completely
totally different.
Yes. So, but what she states is it could take 100 years or more for this change to actually take place. So we have to settle for a half-changed world, the one we live in now, where women and men have equal opportunities.
Yeah.
But they don't, to a 50% degree, become engineers or nurses.
No, exactly.
So
we have discussed this in Swedish, you and I.
Yes, we have.
Equality principle. And you discussed it with Harald Eyer.
Yes, and Christina Hoff Sommers.
And Christina Hoff Sommers.
And Brendan O'Neill.
And Brendan O'Neill, I know.
Yes. So,
so you've discussed it a lot. So
yes.
We don't need to go into that.
I think you as a listener by now know the difference between gender equity and gender equality. So anyway, she states that if neither of these options of just waiting and see, that's my addendum, is appealing, then maybe it's time, and these are her words, to be less polite and more disruptive. Like the first and second wave feminists, they weren't always popular, it's true, but look at what they achieved by not asking nicely. And then she concludes, which of these directions we prefer is up to us. It's a question for our values, not science. But that evolving science is showing that one-time honored option is no longer available to us. It's time to stop blaming testosterone Rex, because that king is dead.
Yeah, no.
So she hasn't disproved testosterone Rex. She decided before she set out that testosterone is not the defining factor in sex or gender difference. And that she states that in the beginning of the book.
Yeah,
and that's an extremely unscientific way to start a book, because you've reached your conclusion beforehand.
That's the way gender theory always is, that they say, like, gender theory is based on the axiom that there's no, all differences between men and women are social constructs. There are no biological differences. That's what they say as a the starting point of gender theory, and that's what she does as well.
Yes.
The problem is that's not what research says. That's what gender religion says.
But you admire this book anyway as a sort of intellectual acrobatics.
I admire the book because it's so obviously wrong from page 1 to page 220. And if you and I would not have know the things that we knew before we read the book, it would sound really intriguing and convincing. So it is a book that should have a prize for, like you said, propaganda prize. It's really an amazing piece of propaganda.
I see.
I don't know if you agree, because I totally agree that this is a terrible book. I think it's just because it is so well written. That's the worst part of the book. If it were like many of the Swedish gender religious
nutcases
would have written it, it would not be troublesome. But it is a troublesome book because it's really well written, and it's really funny in parts as well.
Yes, she at one point refers to the family dog and says it's going to die, and she toys with the idea of castrating it and using its balls as a keychain ring.
Yeah, I know.
No. That sounds like a very funny person who you'd like to hang around
with. I would say that this person is, if it would have been a man who had that kind of joke, you would call him a psychopath.
Without a doubt. A lot of the prescriptions she prescribes, or at least a lot of the solutions she prescribes, are obviously authoritarian, collectivist.
Obviously, but she gets away with it by being a woman.
I think she does. So that's where one of the sex differences between men and women actually work to a woman's advantage.
Extreme advantage. And I think it might be biological.
So do I. Thank you for coming, David.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to me and my guest, David Eberhardt. This podcast is called Deconstructive Criticism, but in Swedish, so it's really Dekonstruktiv Kritik. And links to David's personals, Fine's book, and the articles mentioned can be found below the episode on Patreon. Thank you for being a patron, swishing me at 076-894-3737, 076-894-3737, or donating bitcoins to the address written below in the description to this episode. I also want to remind you that it is per your request that I made t-shirts to symbolize the spirit of this podcast. A red t-shirt with the upbeat message "Crush Socialism" written in Swedish across the chest, and the clarification "Socialism is evil" dotted with a heart on the back. Buy one. Remember that with every purchase being an active act of capitalism, we get closer to crushing socialism for good. There's also a blue t-shirt with "Deconstruktiv Kritik" and this podcast's slogan "Your feelings are hurting my thoughts" written on the chest. They are fantastically stylish, if you ask me. So please go into my webpage, www.aaronflam.com/merchandise, and buy one or two. Until you hear from me next, have a good unit of time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.